Computer chips are now much easier to find. I'm David Brancaccio. You'll remember the shortage of microprocessors, all the hard-to-find computer chips. There's now a glut of silicon, and chip makers are cutting costs and making downbeat predictions about profits in the months ahead. The latest company is AMD. It expects a sales decline of 10% this quarter. Marketplace's Nova Safo is here with more.
Yeah, sales decline as well as profit margins declining. Believe it or not, David, that's good news from AMD. That's what counts as good news in the chips business. Its sales were actually up in the last quarter of 22. Now it expects a downturn, and it's not alone. Intel last week reported a 32% sales decline for the fourth quarter. It expects to lose money this quarter. And the list goes on. Samsung says memory chip sales fell 8% in its previous quarter. Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Company, that's the biggest contract chip manufacturer out there, expects sales to be down 5% this quarter.
And chip profits, part of that, but how does that fit into the health of the larger tech industry?
Well, it's definitely got a cold. Shipments are down for PCs, smartphones. Memory chip prices have fallen by double-digit percentages. But there's also a buildup of inventory because there was such a ramp up to get desperately needed chips out there into the economy. Now there's worries about possible recession and businesses are cutting costs, even in things like data centers, which had maintained growth. And chip makers are cutting back production to burn through a glut of inventory. And it's a sudden and dramatic shift. In the memory chip market, for example, South Korean manufacturer SK Hynix called it an unprecedented deterioration in demand. And some companies say they expect the slowdown to last at least through mid-year.
All right, Nova Safo, thank you. On this 1st of February, we can tell you that the stock market had a strong January, with the NASDAQ increasing 10.7%, the biggest jump in any January in more than two decades. The S&P went up 6% in the month just ended, the strongest showing in 4 years. Some of this are companies doing better than expected. Some of this is the growing sense that the big jumps in interest rates to fight inflation are now maybe behind us. The Federal Reserve is expected to announce a small increase of 0.25 percentage point later today after the S&P went up 1.5% yesterday. S&P futures are down 0.4% now. ChatGPT, the artificial intelligence technique that yields spookily plausible results, has been getting much attention. It can write business letters, college essays, much more. But it's also cheating on a stick. That's why 22-year-old Princeton University student Edward Tien has created GPT-0, a tool that helps detect whether text has been generated by a computer or a human. He spoke with our editorial partners at the BBC.
So we use two main indicators in GPT-0 right now. One is called perplexity, which is more of a fingerprint of the text. It's almost like asking the AI itself how likely it is to generate a piece of text. And that's more of like the numeric indicator. And then there's burstiness, which is more of a big picture indicator in terms of with human writing, humans have creativity. We have sudden bursts in creativity because of our short-term memory. And these machines, their writing is more constant over time. So that's sort of the difference there. And there's a lot of research to be done in improving, and we're adding like a host of other variables to GPT-0. But yeah, so those are sort of the big ones that we're starting with.
Now, there's also word that the company behind ChatGPT itself has a tool to detect text generated by artificial intelligence. OpenAI says it works a quarter of the time. Someone should get the AI to write the screenplay of a new version of Cyrano, in which the Awkward with Words character uses ChatGPT to woo Roxanne. You're going to have to pay me for that concept. Just spell Brancaccio right in the credits.
Hey everyone, it's Rima Khreis, host of This Is Uncomfortable. If you're looking for some good recommendations on books to read, well, you should join This Is Uncomfortable's Summer Book Club. Every other week in our newsletter, we'll share a new book that'll make you rethink your relationship to money, class, and work, while also featuring an interview with the author or an expert on the topic. Plus, when you join, you'll be entered in a giveaway where you could win some This Is Uncomfortable merch. Be sure to check it out. Sign up today at marketplace.org/bookclub.
You'll still see Boeing 747s in the sky with the pregnant guppy profile. How can you miss them? But the very last one to come off the production line has now been delivered. Marketplace's Kristen Schwab has more on how the wide-body design that could carry up to 500 passengers changed air travel.
The Boeing 747 took its first commercial flight in January of 1970. And Michael Lombardi, a historian at Boeing, says it was a magical time in history.
It was just a couple months after Neil Armstrong had stepped onto the moon. When we believed we could do anything, when our only limit was our imagination.
The jumbo jet was the airline industry's equivalent of the moon landing because it revolutionized air travel.
It started to democratize flight.
Before the 747, flying was expensive, a luxury for businessmen and the upper class. Bob Vanderlinden is curator of air transportation at the Smithsonian's National Air and Space Museum.
In the 1930s, it cost $300 to fly to California. Well, that's what it costs today if you get a good ticket. But the difference is huge. $300 in the 1930s bought you a car.
The new jet had more than double the capacity of its predecessor. It featured a new turbofan engine that made flight more fuel efficient, and it had a special nose that opened and allowed the loading of larger cargo. And aesthetically, Vanderlinden says it also had a distinct style.
It's one of the few airplanes most people could recognize. The wings are swept a little bit more, the four engines on it, and of course, the big hump that's on the nose.
But for Boeing, big rewards didn't come without big risks. Scott Merowitz is executive editor at travel website The Point Sky.
They had to build a plane from scratch that had never been this big before.
It was so big, Boeing had to build a new plant to house it and figure out how existing runways and gates could accommodate its size. It took over 2 years and more than $1 billion, and it almost bankrupted the company. But its contract with Pan Am, then one of the largest and most glamorous carriers, helped solidify its place in the industry. Until now.
The 747's demise can only be blamed on Boeing.
Merowitz says Boeing has since launched smaller jets with fewer engines that allow airlines to offer more long-haul, nonstop flights from smaller cities. Only a handful of airlines still fly the remaining 747s in the sky. I'm Kristen Schwab for Marketplace.
Boeing rival Airbus has an A380 that can take up to 850 passengers if everyone flies coach. I'm David Brancaccio, Marketplace Morning Report. APM, American Public Media.
Hey everyone, it's Rima Jerez, host of This is Uncomfortable. If you're looking for some good recommendations on books to read, well, you should join This is Uncomfortable's Summer Book Club. Every other week in our newsletter, we'll share a new book that'll make you rethink your relationship to money, class, and work, while also featuring an interview with the author or an expert on the topic. Plus, when you join, you'll be entered in a giveaway where you could win some This Is Uncomfortable merch. Be sure to check it out. Sign up today at marketplace.org/bookclub.